together. With the name of love above all others. And every faith, heart, fallen brother can rediscover.
Welcome to the Rediscover Hour on Relevant Radio, a time to explore our Catholic faith and find out about ways to share the faith with others. Help create the possibility of an encounter with the person of Jesus Christ in the lives of others by living out the call to the new evangelization and helping fellow Catholics rediscover full life in the Church. The Rediscover Hour is brought to you by Catholic United Financial. Every step, every journey, they're there for life. The Rediscover Hour starts now.
Hi, welcome to the Rediscover Hour. My name is Alyssa Bormis. I'm sitting in today for Pat Conroy. And because he's such a great man, right, we need two of me. So we have Gene Stoppelstead with me as well. Gene, welcome.
Thanks so much, Alyssa. It's great to be back.
Thanks for hosting the program with me.
I'm really looking forward to today.
Thanks. When the email came to ask me to be on the show, and they said it was a show for the 50th anniversary of Humanae Vitae, my email back was yes, exclamation point. I was so thrilled to be here. So thank you for the invitation.
You're really welcome. It is an exciting topic. It's such a wonderful message, a joyful message for our day. Mm. So I'm glad we'll be here we've got great guests to unpack that message and have a great discussion.
Absolutely. Well, if you haven't heard, Humanae Vitae, this beautiful encyclical by Paul VI, is turning 50 years old on July 25th. And it couldn't be more fresh. The first time I read Humanae Vitae was in 2004. I was in Catholic studies, and it was, I had just happened along to Catholic studies because of my dear spiritual father, Bishop Paul Dudley of happy memory. He sent me to Catholic studies, and mostly because he was aggravated with my life. Like, you're not doing anything with your life, Alyssa. You have to do, okay. And everything was a wonder to me having gotten there. But then the winter semester, it was Catherine Jack Deevil, Dr. Deevil, and she gave us an assignment that changed my life. It was reading Humanae Vitae. And I just was stunned because everything in my life had been against Humanae Vitae in a sense. And I had crashed and, as people say, hit bottom. And was finally coming back to the Church after 17 really dark years. And reading this document, I kept flipping to the back page because that's where it says when Paul VI wrote it, thinking, is this the document that was written when I was 3 years old? It can't be. It looks like he wrote it last week, except for I know, right? And I was just stunned. And this incredible gift that Paul VI gave the Church, so timely then, but possibly even more timely now. But truth doesn't get old.
It never does. And I think so many people think of the Humanae Vitae document as something very negative, as the Church's coming out against contraception, when in fact, it is the Church's proclamation about the joy of our humanity.
Yeah, absolutely. It's coming out for life and for right relationship with God, with others, and within yourself. It's all about right relationship. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, in a time when we can become very confused about who we are as persons, and you were talking about right relationships and how we relate to other people, and we look for answers in a variety of ways, and it's such a beautiful, our Church is such a beautiful source of identity, of who we are and what we are called to and why we are made.
Thank you for saying that. And I think one of the things, when I came home to the Church, one of the things that was so stunning to me as I would discover every teaching that I had been against of the Churches, when I discovered sort of the underpinnings of it, I kept thinking, oh my, the Church has always wanted me, since my baptism, to have the best life, not the 432nd best life or the millionth best life, but it wanted me to have the best life, and that was living in communion with the church.
Absolutely. And that's, I think sometimes we forget that, that Christ, that God our Father, that they desire our joy, our happiness, for us to be with them. And it's not, they always tell us the truth, and the truth is simple. It's a simple truth.
Amen.
But sometimes in our culture today, it seems so difficult.
Yeah.
It's so hard because we can have a tendency to become disordered, to be, to choose wrongly. Oh my goodness, sometimes I think if I'm given a choice, 99% of the time I'm going to choose wrongly. But the church gives us the guidance to know how to choose correctly.
I love it. Well, I want to say also, you're with the Archdiocese, and 4 years ago the Archdiocese had me speak at the Champions of Life banquet. I was a keynote speaker.
Yeah.
And just by some providential gift, that was recorded. And today, we're releasing this talk as a gift from Wine Women in the New Evangelization. So you can go to CatholicVineyard.com and listen to the talk. But I want to just have one excerpt played here of sort of my look at Humanae Vitae. When I thought because of birth control, I could do whatever I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And so if you would, just listen to this excerpt.
I was at Mass on July 14, 2002, and this is what I wrote in my journal. The priest had given a homily about contraception. I now understand that in my life, birth control was so I could do what I wanted, when I wanted. I was putting myself in control. God should be in control. Also, the birth control gave a green light to allowing other men to use me. In my eyes, I thought that because of birth control, nothing would happen. What I didn't take into consideration was my soul. Nothing did happen, as in my soul seemed to be nothing. It was this vast wasteland of nothingness. My self-worth was nothing. What men thought of me was nothing. And nothing happened. I didn't find what I was looking for. I got nothing back from these men. There was nothing to show for all this fun. It was nothing. I still felt empty. Without birth control, one must finally realize what one is engaging in. We must put God first, not the physical first. In that, a different sort of nothing will happen. Nothing bad will happen to your soul. In the sanctity of marriage, I will have nothing to worry about in terms of my husband respecting me. He will have already committed his soul to mine before he has committed his body, and nothing will be better. So many people think that nothing will happen with contraception, and I tell them, you're right. Nothing will happen. Nothing has become an epidemic.
What a fantastic quote. I remember that day when you gave that presentation, and I was moved then, and I moved again. This is exactly what we're trying to counteract in our culture.
Absolutely, and I lived what the world taught, and I paid the price, right? And I, as I say later in the speech in a different part, I don't have the poor me's. I have the poor my generation, that we were met with silence when we should have been taught about Humanae Vitae.
Exactly. I think there are so many people in our culture today who, following up on your quote, that nothingness, the epidemic of nothingness, it's a numbness. And they think that I'm fine because I don't have to feel anything.
Yeah.
When what they are called to is immense joy.
Yeah, joy. I had no joy, zero joy in my life. It was darkness. And now, in a certain sense, I suppose the world could look at me and think, well, you have nothing going for you. I'm not married. Except for all, I have all manner of joy.
Absolutely.
All
That's
in
beautiful.
Christ.
So beautiful, Alyssa.
Oh, fantastic. Jean, well, we have a big show, and we will be back very shortly to speak to Dr. Stephen Haney. He's an associate professor of philosophy at the University of St. Thomas, and we'll be right back.
Rediscover.
Do you know
know what it means to give first? It's giving without asking for something in return, right? Helping a neighbor, friend, or family member. Giving your time, energy, or money to support a great cause. Well, the folks at Catholic United Financial know firsthand the benefits of giving first. Why? Because they're a not-for-profit financial company. For example, no one asked them to raise millions of dollars each year for Catholic schools. It's what they do. No one asked them to give post-secondary scholarships to over 500 kids each year. It's what they do. No one asked them to create a disaster response team 10 years ago to help those in need. And finally, no one asked them to hold annual volunteer events to help benefit the homeless and those less well-off. They do it because they're a give-first organization, and they've been doing it for 140 years. People helping people with life insurance, annuities, and retirement products. Look them up at CatholicUnitedFinancial.org and do business with a give-first organization. Give them a call today.
There are those who hear in the secular media things that fit their agenda, that this Pope wants to change all kinds of ideologies that they have. What I think they're all missing is the change he wants is in us.
Talk radio for Catholic life. Relevant radio.
Love wash over a multitude of things. Love wash over a multitude of things. Love wash over.
Hi, welcome back to the Rediscover Hour. I am Alyssa Bormis, sitting in for Pat Conroy today, and I have Jean Stoppelstedt with me. And we have a special show today. We're celebrating the 50th anniversary of the encyclical Humanae Vitae by Paul VI. It's a great thing. And as I said before, we have a special guest with us. His name is Dr. Stephen Haney. Welcome, Dr. Haney. How are you?
I'm fine. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thanks for coming. You are an associate professor of philosophy at the University of St. Thomas with an expertise in ethics, biomedical ethics, and ethics and public policy. Wow.
It's a lot of titles, but
it's a lot of
it
titles.
Doesn't. Yeah, I'm okay.
And you're just a regular guy.
Just a regular guy.
You know, one of the things, as we jumped into this conversation before the show, one of the things that we talked about was Jesus and marriage and his teaching on marriage. And I just want you to pick up from there.
Well, I'm trying to remember what we were talking about there. We talked about
hard.
Many things right before that.
You're right. Jesus' teaching on marriage
Jesus,
is hard.
When he taught about marriage, he said what he had to say about divorce. And people said, this is too hard. And they left. That is a difficulty, but it is the truth. Mm. And see, this is where my teacher hat goes on right now. Okay, so then I start saying, "Here's all the hard things that we have to say about this," and people look at me like, "Well, you're just a meanie." But it's not just that. There is, as you were talking about earlier on, there is a joy in following the path,
mm-hmm.
because this is how we are designed. This is how we're made. If we don't follow the path that we're made to follow, we are not going to flourish. We are not going to be happy. Mm-hmm. So we talked about that a little ahead of time too, right?
Exactly. And I think frequently in our culture today, people try to kind of parse the human person. They might think of themselves as physical beings, and exclude the spirituality of their soul, their union with God.
Right.
And I think we try to pigeonhole everyone with special interests or special situations. And Paul VI, he's so wise. And at the very beginning of his document, he talked about how we have to approach the human person. And he said in Article 7, the question of human procreation, like every other question which touches on human life, involves more than the limited aspects specific to such disciplines as biology, psychology, demographics, or sociology. It is the whole man and the whole mission to which he is called that must be considered. So when we talk about the human person, what is Paul VI really trying to say? This is a fundamental principle to Humana Vitae. And could you kind of unpack that for us?
I'll try. Do you have a semester? What we're saying here is, look, God, without God, there isn't anything. All right. God made everything that exists. He had a plan in mind, and he gave every creature the resources, the design principles, to reach the goals that he had in mind. It's not like we are designed as some sort of, well, you got a little piece of you here and a little piece of you there, and there's your social part over here, and that's really not connected. It's all connected. It's all of a piece. We are this one single being, body and soul, that can only find our fulfillment in relation to other people, mm-hmm. And in relation to God. And when we try to separate those things out, where are we going to end up? We're going to end up disintegrated. We're going to end up in pieces. And that is precisely what we see going on in the whole contraceptive mentality, an attempt to separate out things. I said, okay, I'm gonna do this thing with my body. I'm going to, and my wife and I talk about this when we're doing the marriage talks. What am I saying when I contracept, for instance? I am saying, I'm going to give you all of myself in this action, okay, in this sexual act. All of me except this part, right? Well, this is going to be a disaster. All right, as soon as we start separating ourselves out into component parts and pretending that we can act on one thing and ignore the other thing, we're going to be in trouble. And it's not just, I'm not talking about any sort of religious sense, I'm just talking about there are natural consequences to this. All right, it's not a good idea to separate out these various aspects of ourselves. I'm babbling. Go ahead. You look like you're going to ask me something.
Well, I was just going to say, as you were talking about our fertility and being, you know, kind of pushing that off to the side a little mm-hmm. bit, as opposed to integrating it into our who we are as a complete human person. Can you give us a positive vision of human sexuality? How did God call us to use our fertility?
When we look at ourselves, okay, we look at our the things that we desire, okay, we have to ask ourselves, does this desire that I have, this thing that I want to do, make sense out of anything, right? Does this desire make sense out of this body that I have? All right, and it's not just my body in this case. All right, there's male and female. All right, why is there male and female? What would be the point of that? All right, we have to ask ourselves: does this drive that I have? I have a drive for this peculiar action, which, when you get right down to it, is really very. It really is a peculiar action, right?
It is.
You know, if you present it to someone who has never seen it before, never heard of it, they would say, "Well, that's just weird." All right, but we have a drive to it. We want to do this action with somebody, and it's like, this is great stuff. But why is it great? Because it leads to something. Mm-hmm. There's an end that makes sense out of this, and the end of sex is ultimately children. That's what makes sense out of these bodies. This drive, these actions. And so when we try to separate those things out, we're leaving out, we can pursue one thing and leave the other part out, and we're going to be missing something vital, which is why in Humanae Vitae, Paul VI talks about the unitive aspect and the procreative aspect of sexuality, and that they're inseparable. So that when I try to separate these two things, I am doing something, and this is the words he used, that's intrinsically dishonest. Okay, it's intrinsically dishonest. There's you're telling a lie. Okay, and so what is the joyful way to do this? Don't do it dishonestly.
Yeah.
All right. These things go together. There's an incredible, wonderful. I've lost the word. There was a word there. I don't know. It's an incredible, wonderful thing. Anyways, to integrate these things, my body, my desires, my actions, and openness to this end, which is itself also a gift, right? God gives us the gift of ourselves, the gift of these drives, the gift of this action, the gift of the pleasure that comes from the action, and the gift of children that comes from that. Mm. And when we try to say, oh, those children, man, those are bad. We don't want those. What is that?
You know, I love that you've said intrinsically dishonest.
Yeah.
And I think of my own life.
Thank Paul Six for that one.
Yeah. All right. Good job, Paul. I think of my life, and I think of how dishonest everything was. And I was sort of really an extreme case, right? You might want to study this sort of extreme. Do you have a semester?
Yeah.
And
plenty to look at.
That I knew on the surface that I should look like I'm happy. And so I, in a certain sense, danced as quickly as I could to make that happen. But not only was I dishonest in this parade of bad men, but then everything became dishonest. I, in essence, taught myself that dishonesty is fine. And so whatever suited me in this moment would be my truth, so to speak. And that, so I'm not saying that every case of contraception leads to this sort of dishonesty, but again, mine was a really extreme case, and it led to dishonesty in everything. Nearly everything I did was lying.
Even if it doesn't lead down that path for every single person, it's going to have an effect on us,
yes.
Right? It's going to disintegrate us. But even more so, notice what Paul 6 talks about in here. What are the effects of this on a society as a whole? Okay, when a whole society is doing this, things start to get rocky.
Mm-hmm.
There's all sorts of, men become, and John Paul picked up on this, John Paul II picked up on this one big time, right? Men become more dominating, okay? We treat nature and we treat each other as things to be dominated. And women who have a natural receptiveness tend to become more, rather than receptive, merely submissive.
Mm.
All right. So and think this is the way to go. So men think I've got to dominate. Women think I have to simply just go along, and nobody's being honest about who we really are. What have we done? What have we done here? We've decided for ourselves what we think is right and wrong. And you remember how we got started with that, okay?
There's this garden.
There's this garden, right, exactly. And this is exactly what this is. Well, I'll decide for myself. And how did that work out?
Yeah.
All right? It never works out. Right away, Adam and Eve are hiding from one another, hiding from God, trying not to... they know something's gone amiss. Everything feels wrong. And so, and we know this in our guts. All right. This is the thing about Aquinas calls them our fundamental natural drives, right? And there's something that we can never let, we never forget. They're always down there. We're always aware that there is something amiss when we violate the fundamental drives that we have. And so when we treat our sexuality as though we are merely bodies, or that we are some kind of spiritual creature that has, you know, that uses our body like a coat or something like that, and we can just take it on and put it on, you know, and it won't make any difference. Let's put a new coat on tomorrow. Well, no, that's not how we are. We are integral beings, and so when we separate these things, we're going to experience the effects of it, even if we don't know it or we don't admit it to ourselves. The not admitting it to ourselves is probably the worst part. That's what my mother used to always say. You know what person you're fooling with that line is you. All right, and that's where we are oftentimes individually and as a society. We're, you know.
And I believe that we can see it really rampant in our culture today. I mean, look at the Me Too movement.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? That sense of domination of women
men.
By men.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Well, we're going to take a break here, but Dr. Haney, I hope you can come back with us after the break.
Sure.
All right. Well, you've been listening to the Rediscover Hour. We'll be right back after this break.
I don't think every Catholic really knows what the church teaches and what the truth is. And that's why I thank God for venues like Relevant Radio, where you're teaching what God teaches.
We're here to help you. We're here to say, hey, this is where true happiness will be found. Here's the truth about marriage. Here's the truth about life. Here's the truth that will bring you fulfillment. And you're not going to find that any other place than in Jesus Christ. And Relevant Radio's whole mission is to make sure that message reaches you and souls who perhaps are really blinded by the great deception of our day, by the culture. If you really want to change your culture, keep Relevant Radio booming.
Relevant Radio is listener-supported radio. Join our St. Joseph Recurring Gift Society. There are both spiritual and practical benefits to joining our St. Joseph Recurring Gift Society. You can review all those benefits at relevantradio.com, keyword gift, or call 1-877-291-0123. 1-877-291-0123.
My hope on your return, now all that sorrow so soon will burn. So tend my heart with tender hands, and see your sunshine is pouring in.
Hi, welcome back to the Rediscover Hour. I'm your guest host today, Alyssa Bormas, along with Jean Stelpelstead. And we're sitting in for Pat Conroy today. Thank you for allowing us to be here. It's the 50th anniversary edition of the show. Let me say it this way. The show is taking into account the 50th anniversary of Humanae Vitae by Paul VI, the incredible encyclical. And we've been speaking with Dr. Stephen Haney. He's a philosopher at the University of St. Thomas. I don't know why I said it's
everybody thinks that way.
My brain is shutting down on me, I think. Anyway, we were talking before the break about that you're not just a body or a soul, that we're this body and soul that work together. And you can't just sort of disassociate the two of them when it seems, you know, convenient and then put it all back together on a different day. I wanted to speak about relationship, and I thought what I would do is go to another excerpt from the speech that I gave at the Champions of Life banquet. Thank you. I keep saying it wrong. And which also, by the way, if you want to hear the whole speech, you can go to catholicvineyard.com. It's up there today. But let's listen to this excerpt on my reading of Humanae Vitae the first time.
It was February 2004, my second semester of the master's program, and enter the philosopher, Dr. Catherine Jack Deevil. She gave us an assignment that would change everything. Read Paul VI, Humanae Vitae. And then there was this paragraph. Responsible men can become more deeply convinced of the truth of the doctrine laid down by the Church on this issue if they reflect on the consequences of methods and plans for artificial birth control. Let them first consider how easily this course of action could open wide the way for marital infidelity and a general lowering of moral standards. Not much experience is needed to be fully aware of human weakness and to understand that human beings, and especially the young, who are so exposed to temptation, need incentives to keep the moral law. And it is an evil thing to make it easy for them to break that law. Another effect that gives cause for alarm is that a man who grows accustomed to the use of contraceptive methods may forget the reverence due to a woman and, disregarding her physical and emotional equilibrium, reduce her to being a mere instrument for the satisfaction of his own desires no longer considering her as his partner, whom he should surround with care and affection. I must have read this paragraph 100 times. Paul VI had predicted my life and the lives of my generation, and no one thought to tell us. Instead, we were just met with silence.
Again, this paragraph to me, first of all, reading Humanae Vitae, if you're sitting in the audience and you've never read Humanae Vitae, Google it right now. Humanae is human, A-E, and Vitae is V-I-T-A-E. Google it up, read it, it's so accessible. And there'll probably be a paragraph you stumble across and think, why didn't I know this? But that paragraph says everything about what you were talking about, of this domination of men, of fitting in, Jean, with what you said about the Me Too movement, where sort of, I'm so frustrated that men have been dominating me in a sense, but of course.
We've allowed it with our falling away,
yes,
from the truth of the human person,
right,
and the meaning of our sexuality. And when we try to make the conjugal love into an act that of just pure pleasure and satisfaction, mm-hmm, as opposed to this procreative and unitive moment,
yeah,
then we do open ourselves up for becoming dominated by the male species.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I want to go back to Dr. Haney here, is that the church doesn't give rules or laws just because.
No.
Kids might do that in a game.
Right.
You can't bounce the ball twice. Why? Because I said so. But that's not it with the church. And even in the garden, it's not that Adam and Eve broke a rule. It's that they broke a relationship.
Yes. Obviously, we have rules.
Yes.
The rules express something. They're not just made up by people who have power.
Right.
These particular kinds of rules are given to us by the one who gave us being,
yeah,
by the one who gave us life. This is what the natural law is, ultimately, right? Now,
yeah,
even if you don't talk about God, you can look at us and see that we have, we are made in a certain way, that we come into existence in a certain sort of way. We didn't make it up,
mm-hmm,
okay? We just discover it. And we see all these things in the universe are moving toward certain kinds of ends and goals. And there are certain things which are compatible with that, moving toward those ends and goals, and there are other kinds of actions which aren't. And so what is God's plan, if we bring it back to God?
Mm-hmm.
God created all these things. His plan is for them to reach those goals.
Yeah.
Same for us. So what are the rules? The rules that we come up with, the moral law, it should be nothing more than the expression of precisely that. What are these... what are the ways of expressing what our ends are and how we're supposed to meet them? And those and a big part of that is not just how do I perform when I'm standing by myself someplace.
Mm-hmm.
Most of what it is that human beings do is in relation to other people.
Amen.
And so there are rules of relationship, and they're not just rules of relationship that again are made up by someone who's got power. They come from the very essence of what it means to be a human being in a relationship with another human being, or to be in a relationship with God. So we have to respect those, and if we don't, there's going to be trouble.
Yeah, there's going to be trouble.
There's going to be trouble.
Well, and that the rules are given, sort of like any good parent, Holy Mother Church, like any good parent, gives rules so you can maintain relationships.
Yes.
Not rules so I can trip you up and say, gotcha. It's rules so you can maintain the relationship interiorly with others and with God.
Yes, precisely. They're the well, we've been saying it over and over again.
Yeah.
What is it that we experience when we do this whole sexuality thing right?
Joy.
Joy. These are the rules of joy. All right, they're not the rules of again, my wife's got all the good teaching tips. All right, so she came up with this. Says, look, you got these two different ways of thinking of rules, and this is how she starts out her ethics class. You can think about the rules as I'm standing on a ski slope, and you could have a rule that says you have to wear your lift ticket on your jacket. All right, why? Well, because we said so. All right, and want it to be right there. But you also have other rules for skiing, which are like, when you ski, bend your knees. All right? That's not being imposed on you by anyone else. That's just, if you don't bend your knees, what happens? All right? Crash, bang, broken leg, whatever. That's what's happening here. We have an entire society that has built itself around an intrinsically dishonest action or set of actions. I mean, it's not just contraception that Paul Six is talking about here. It's our whole vision of what sexuality is all about. And so we have to be aware of what sexuality really means and what it's all about if we're going to use it right. If we don't, crash, bang, broken legs, all right? Or in this case, broken everything else, broken everything. Relationships, broken, my interior life is messed up. This is, I think, one of the reasons that Paul Six says very clearly in here, it's really important that we not think that the best way to go about dealing with real difficulties in life, okay? People have real difficulties in life. It's hard to be married. It's hard to be married and have a lot of children. It's hard to be married and have a lot of children and not have any money. It's hard to be married and have a lot of children and not have any money, and then somebody gets sick, and so forth. And you know, you can build all the problems on it you want. He says, but is the answer to that a technological answer? And he says, what artificial birth control is doing is throwing an easy fix at us, mm-hmm. when the real answer has to be mastery of ourselves and learning what it means to be in a real relationship with somebody. Mm-hmm. All right, there are hard things to be done here. How are we going to do that? We're not going to be able to do it by treating our sexuality dishonestly, by not fully understanding what it's about and entering into the project as it was designed. I had a student. There was this fellow who used to come to. Took evening classes. He was a later life student. He would come to my class. He would come to my wife's classes, and both at different schools, just for the educational purposes. But he was in Ann's class, and they were talking about this topic. They were talking about contraception in class at one point, and she mentioned they had read something that said there's something dishonest about it, and it's properly speaking not an act of love if I am doing something dishonest. And he says, wait a minute, do you mean I don't love my wife if I use contraception? And her answer was, and this is the right answer, well, no. It's just that you're performing an action that is not in keeping with what it is that you want to say. Okay? I want to say with my body, with my whole self, I love you. I give myself entirely to you. And then I have this other action that I'm doing that is just not in keeping with that. It says precisely the opposite. It says there's something about you which I hate, something about you which I can't take. I don't want any part of. Mm-hmm. And so, so the slow, you know, he was fairly lucky. His relationship with his spouse worked out fairly well.
Right.
Not so lucky for others.
No.
People who don't have the resources to keep finding ways of loving properly are going to have that chip away, and then we're in trouble. And a society that doesn't have any borders or boundaries either is chip away, and it's just going to go in very bad directions.
So, you know, in the our culture today, so many people have grave misconceptions about what Humanae Vitae actually professed and what it actually says. And you were talking about being open to life, and being married is hard, and having a lot of kids is hard, and having financial difficulties is hard. But does Humanae Vitae really say that you have to have as many kids as is humanly, biologically possible?
No, it doesn't say anything like that. It says it is very clear about that. But that, of course, is one of the bones of contention for people. They hear a little bit of it, mm-hmm. and they say, well, it says, the teaching of the church is, we're human beings, we have brains, we get to decide how many children we want to have. Okay. There's a certain truth to that. We are human beings. We do have brains. We should use our brains to help us to figure out what is the most reasonable course of action given how we see it. But what it is that natural family planning does, okay, is to open us up to the possibility that maybe we don't know everything, that we don't know everything that is the best for us. And so no matter how it is, that whatever it is that we plan, we always have to go about that in a way that is fitting for us as human beings. So if what we've been saying here, what Paul VI says very clearly in the document is contraception and sterilization and abortion and other things like that are not fitting ways of going about planning to have children or to avoid children. Mm-hmm. God has given us bodies that work in a certain sort of way. And if we pay attention to that, pay attention to those bodies, and integrate ourselves with our bodies so that we are thinking of this as I'm thinking of myself as one whole thing, not separating myself out, and I'm thinking about my relationship with my spouse as one whole thing, and I'm not trying to separate little aspects of it from other aspects of it, then I'm going to enter into these actions in a spirit of the attempt at self-mastery and an attempt at integration that will lead to all kinds of good things in the end. All right, it'll lead to a stronger relationship, stronger marriages, stronger sense of self, and spiritual growth along the way.
Amen. Yeah. You know, I would have one thing to say to, you said it earlier as you were just talking about getting bits and pieces and thinking, well, it's not, that what they're saying is this thing. You know, I'll make, they give me three bits of information, sound bites, and I'll make my own decision. And I think one of the things that happens with the faith, or frankly with Humanae Vitae, is when I give you just tiny little bits of it, in a certain sense, I inoculate you from it. And that you, right, it's sort of like if I give you a tiny, tiny, tiny bit of chicken pox, then you're inoculated from chicken pox.
Yeah, yeah.
And so my challenge to the audience would be, read Humanae Vitae. Don't take a soundbite. Read the whole document. And then begin asking questions. Be docile to the document, in a sense.
Give it a chance.
Give it a chance.
Yeah.
The world has tried to inoculate us from this. In just a second or two, we have Dr. Christopher Thompson with us, and he'll be with us in just a few minutes. So thank you so much, Dr. Haney, for coming here and speaking with us today. You're amazing.
I was thrilled to be here. Thank you very much.
Fantastic. Yeah. And so if you just give us a minute, we'll be right back, and we'll have Dr. Thompson with us.
Seems like the roller coaster stock market has everyone on edge lately. What if you could find something safe and secure that's guaranteed to grow, no matter what the market does? If you want to safely tuck your hard-earned money away, but still want growth, Your friends at Catholic United have just the answer, a Catholic United annuity. Their current first-year crediting rate for new annuities is 3% with a guaranteed annual rate of 1.5%, better than most bank CDs you'll find. Catholic United annuities are safe with zero account service fees, and you can set them up like a Roth or traditional IRA. Plus, if you want, you can even create monthly, quarterly, or yearly income payments back to yourself. What's not to like about that? Guarantee yourself a positive return, free from stock market risk. Go to CatholicUnitedFinancial.org and find your local rep who can walk you through all the options. Catholic United Financial, every step, every journey, they are there for life. Give them a call today.
Welcome back to the Rediscover Hour. My name is Alyssa Bormis, and I'm sitting in with Jean Stoppelstead. We are here on the celebration of the 50th anniversary of the encyclical Humanae Vitae. And we have another guest with us. His name is Dr. Christopher Thompson. Welcome, Dr. Thompson. How are you?
Very good and happy to be here.
Great. You are a professor of moral theology and the director of the Center of Theological Formation at the St. Paul Seminary School of Divinity. So not much to do.
That's right.
There's a whole lot to do.
That's right.
We had been speaking with Dr. Haney before about reading Humanae Vitae, and maybe you can just give us a sense of this. What's the gift of Humanae Vitae? What's being revealed there, and why should we read it?
I think that's a great question. Humanae Vitae, at this point, after 50 years, is sort of suffering the fate of the classic. That is, that document everyone quotes, but few people read. Mm-hmm. And in preparation for this, I pulled it out again and thought, well, I'll just take a look at it. And I was just struck by the incredible depth and of insight, the confidence of the document. The confidence of outlook about the human person, about the nature of creation, about the dignity of marriage. You would have thought 50 years now it would maybe start to sound a little quaint, or it might have a certain affectation that sort of reflects a bygone age about June Cleaver and Ward. Hardly. You know, it's really quite prescient, and its truth and its value is still alive and valid today. I would strongly recommend people rereading it. It's interesting, even defenders of Humanae Vitae sometimes talk about, oh, it's a cold document or it's an impersonal. Yeah. I didn't find that at all. Maybe I'm just losing some spark, I don't know. But I found that, well, actually it reads rather beautifully. And I was shocked, even after being in the business, so to speak, how fresh and insightful the document appeared.
Well, I can completely concur. And the first time I read it, I was just... I was a student, but frankly, a student who had come from a world completely different than what I was studying, from a very secular, I was a bill collector, right? Mm-hmm. That's a little bit different than Humanae Vitae, studying Humanae Vitae. Mm-hmm. And having read it the first time, it jumped off the page, and it was, in a sense, earth-shaking to me. I thought, oh, who wrote this? And did he write it last week? Amazing.
Well, all of us, in a certain sense, are in a similar position in that we're all reading it in a context of a highly secular culture. And it is, I think, one of the supreme gifts to the human community, and of course our Catholic community especially, because it teaches us a message that you're just simply not going to get anywhere else. You really do begin to see how the gospel of Jesus Christ is this incredible seed that takes fruit in a person's heart. It's not going to really be coming from secular culture at this point, almost assuredly, so many contrary messages. So I would strongly urge people to take the occasion of the anniversary to take a look at it again, no matter where you are in your walk. Mm-hmm. Some of us are, you know, fully convinced. Frankly, at this point in my life, at 58, I have a hard time seeing in marriage and family on any other terms than what the Church proposes. It's difficult for me to grasp that thinking. But there are a lot of people out there, as you well know, who are quite struggling with the Church's vision. Mm-hmm. Those are the folks that I think that need to take the time to, you know, calm down. A lot of fake news out there, including ecclesial fake news, to sit down and take a look at the document and prayerfully reflect on what it's proposing, and then enter into an examination of conscience to say, is my marriage on all cylinders here? Am I really giving it everything I've got? Am I being the man that God has called me to be? I love the invitation of Humani Vitae. I love the excitement and the adventure of marriage, the great confidence I mentioned earlier that it sort of speaks from about what the human person is capable of, what men and women are capable of. If anything, the culture seems to perennially sell us short. It caters to our basest instincts. The revolution was a sort of, the sexual revolution was a kind of cheap, slavish replacement. We get enslaved to certain issues and passions. It didn't, in fact, liberate. So to me, the vision of Humani Vitae is a vision of people who are self-directed, who are thoughtful, who are capable, who want to love completely and passionately. And that message can get lost in culture, and the document, I think, is a beacon in an otherwise sometimes gloomy world.
I can remember when I was in my 20s and newly married and just really fearful of married life, of the responsibility and the obligations, and how am I going to do this thing of balancing my career and spending time with my spouse and, my goodness, raising children too.
I
was afraid of it.
Right.
And Humani Vitae, you said the proper word, gave me confidence.
Mm-hmm.
It gave me confidence that God had a plan, that this could be, that it's doable, and that the children are not going to be burdens, but joys. And that is what we discovered. Not an easy road. But very few things in our world are that are worthwhile are easy. You have to fight for it.
That's exactly right.
And this gave me the tools to fight for it. You also mentioned another word about conscience, and we have to follow our conscience in responsible parenthood. Could you speak a little bit about that? How do we form that conscience so we know that we're on the right path?
Well, that's a good question, and I think this is the something of the next phase of work that has to happen in the ecclesial community. I mean, we're at 50 years now with the Humani Vitae. I think it's a settled it's settled law, and it is a received doctrine of the church. So we have to, and this I mean now we as Catholics, we have to get better at sort of thinking more deeply about, okay, this is our vision of marriage. What are some of the implications? What's the remaining work that needs to be done? And in the area of responsible parenting, I think this is critical, because in fact there are financial responsibilities. Raising a family is serious business, and you have to ask what is entailed in responsible parenting. I think a greater discernment along that line is really called for. And at least in contemporary culture, I've got a daughter that just got married. It's really about, frankly, instilling them a sense of confidence, instilling in them a sense of their own abilities. It's instilling in them the responsibilities that go with marriage. And to decide to marry is the decision for family. Unfortunately, those two have been separated. People think, well, we're going to get married, and we haven't yet talked about children. You hear that sort of all the time.
Frequently.
You really want to try to unite those two and get the young person thinking about marriage in terms of, am I capable and am I able to step into the responsibilities of having children? That's a great blessing. That's a great responsibility. And our work is to train them in that.
I think you've also said, reading it again, you thought, well, what kind of man am I? And that Humani Vitae is this beautiful clarion call for more, for higher, not a call for mediocrity. Here's the bar of mediocrity. Feel free to fall below it. It's a call for greatness, and it's a time for saints, right?
That's right.
It's a perfect time for saints. Well, thank you so much for joining us. I know this was a short stint with us, but thank you so much for joining us. We were speaking with Dr. Christopher Thompson. He's at the St. Paul Seminary at the School of Divinity, a professor of moral theology, and we're so grateful to have you.
Thank you.
And so, Gene, here we are nearly at the end of this incredible hour, and thank you for coming and speaking about Humani Vitae and what it meant in your married life. It's just incredible.
It was a great day. It was a fun hour to be with you and our great guests, Alyssa.
Amen. So I just have one last thing, is that we have different events coming up, And we just want to be sure that everybody is fully aware of those events.
And we have tons of them. The Archdiocese is hosting a screening of the new documentary Sexual Revolution, 50 Years Since Humanae Vitae, at St. Agnes School in Helen Houle Auditorium, Wednesday, July 25th, 5:30 to 9 p.m. The documentary examines the effects of the free love experiment of the hippie generation and the prophetic encyclical Humanae Vitae. Centerpiece of the film is the dramatic life story of Alana Newman, a talented secular musician. She gives up her entire musical career for life, family, and love, yet ultimately discovers the treasures of theology of the body, Humanae Vitae, and the riches of true freedom. Order tickets at archsbm.org/events.
Grandparents, you're invited to the Nativity Grandparents Apostolate of Saints Joachim and Anne on Wednesday, July 25th at 8:45 a.m. in Steiner Hall of Nativity Catholic Church in St. Paul. Daily Mass will be offered at the church at 8:15 a.m. All grandparents are invited to a time of enrichment, prayer, and fellowship with the presenter, Father Alan Coos, Director for Pastoral Formation and the Teaching Parish Program at the St. Paul Seminary. Father Coos will speak on the gifts that grandparents bestow in faith. Refreshments will be served, and the church and Steiner Hall are both wheelchair accessible. For more information, visit parish.nativity-mn.org or contact Lily at 651-414-9367.
The 2018 Leading with Faith Award luncheon is Friday, August 10th at the University of St. Thomas. Join us to honor and celebrate our Leading with Faith winners. Space is limited, so register today. Gather at 11:30 a.m. for check-in and complimentary beverage service. Lunch is served promptly at noon. These awards are presented by the Catholic Spirit and the Archdiocese of St. Paul and Minneapolis. For more information and to register, visit the events page at archspm.org or call Mary at 651-251-7709.
Grandparents, you're also invited to join Bishop Andrew Cousins for Prayer in Real Life, an evening for grandparents, on Thursday, August 16, from 6:30 to 8 at the Church of the Good Shepherd in Golden Valley. Bishop Cousins will speak on how to pray in real life as grandparents. Let us pray more diligently for our grandchildren. All grandparents are invited to attend. A free will offering will be collected at the event, and refreshments will be provided. There's no cost to attend. Please register and find more details, including a flyer, on the event page at rediscover-faith.org.
Be transformed and transform the world. The Office of Evangelization is excited to announce the Missionary Discipleship Series coming this fall. This series includes 3 4-week sessions in the fall, winter, and spring, each week with a live speaker and time for reflection, prayer, and Q&A with the speaker. For more information, visit the events page at rediscover-faith.org. There will be a series starting this October at St. Hubert in Chanhassen, and a series for young adults taking place at the Church of St. Peter in Mendota. And don't forget to check out rediscover-faith.org and view the interviews via Facebook Live. Great show today.
Oh, thank you very much. It's a great gift to be here with you and with Gene, with Dr. Haney, Dr. Thompson. I'm so thrilled that we've been able to do so.
Well, I am a student, shall we say, of Humanae Vitae myself. It's been a few years since I've read it, but the first time I did, gosh, it's beautiful. It is amazing.
Amen. I think what we should do is read Humanae Vitae. If you have that one last clip, I don't know if you have that, Paul, but maybe we have just a second to play that.
You must read Humanae Vitae. You must learn it. You must teach it. And you must live it. Be not afraid of the gift of Humanae Vitae. Be not afraid to be a voice for life.
There we go.
That's it. And that beautiful baby making that little crying sound. I love that part.
That's life.
Well, thank you so much for joining us at the Rediscover Hour. Pat Conroy will be back, but it's been a great joy on the 50th anniversary of Humanae Vitae. Goodbye from Alyssa Bormis and Gene Stobelstead.
The Rediscover Hour is heard every Friday evening at 9, Saturday at noon, and Sunday morning at 9 on Relevant Radio 1330. Brought to you by Catholic United Financial. Every step, every journey. They're there for life. You can find show archives at rediscover-faith.org and at relevantradio.com, keyword rediscover. The Rediscover Hour is a production of the Archdiocese of St. Paul and Minneapolis in cooperation with Relevant Radio. Rediscover.